Welcome to the DMSG Healthcare Podcast. I'm your host, Chris Hadley, founder and CEO of the Denver Medical Study Group. It's my pleasure today to visit with Mike Fisher, a professor at the Rucker Hartman College of Health Professions at Regis University. In addition to his responsibilities at Regis University, Mike is also a member of our Denver Medical Study Group, and we're glad that he's a part of our team. Mike, thank you for joining me today. Would you tell our listeners a little about yourself and your background?
Oh, it's a pleasure. And by the way, the pleasure is mine to be on this podcast. And it's just been great to be involved with the Denver Medical Study Group, I think, for about 15 years now. So that's been great. I've learned a lot, and it's really an enjoyable event to participate in all the different opportunities that the DMSG provides. My background is pretty diverse, and I'm going to make it fairly short. I've always been committed to healthcare. I feel like a little bit like I'm a Forrest Gump, where I end up in different situations we never quite can anticipate exactly where life will take us. But I started out in clinical research and clinical diagnostics, the cardiopulmonary side, and then moved into management, and then moved into medical device development. And from there, back into hospital and clinic management. I've had a couple of companies that manage clinics. And about 22 years ago, a classmate of mine in my doctoral program had a question for me, and I tried to contact him, and there was an ad at Regis University where he works saying that they were interested in hiring someone to teach physicians in a physician MBA program. And I said, well, I never had any really desire to teach, but I'll give it a shot. And here, 22 years later, I'm still at Regis. So I guess it's, you can consider it a career now, but more by serendipity than by design.
Oh, that's great. I appreciate you sharing that. And, you know, looking at your CV, you have played some important roles professionally in healthcare. What impact have these various roles had on your current position of professor of MS Health Services Administration at Regis?
Well, I tend to believe that whatever experiences we have add to the texture and the robustness of what we can provide the community in whatever position that we hold. So certainly in education, in academia, I'm able to take all of my experiences and at least use that as a foundation. Now, I have to be very careful that contemporary education is much different than it was when I was going to school. And many of my examples that I use are a little bit dated, or that I shouldn't use are a little bit dated. And so instead, I try to find more contemporary issues. Right now, I'm most interested in how technology is impacting the ethics and workforce training and access to healthcare in rural and urban settings.
As you know, we have on our advisory board for the major universities, including Regis University, part of our Denver Medical Study Group advisory board. I understand from talking to some of the other directors in the various universities that quite a bit of the course training is online. Is that the case at Regis?
Yeah, Regis, I like to brag a little bit, was one of the pioneers in online education. When I taught on the MBA side, which is the first 14 years I was at Regis, they brought me on board because the MBA program was growing at such a fast pace. And at one point, the Regis MBA program was the largest in the country. That was for about a minute and a half, because then some of the other large universities saw how successful we were and came in and competed with us in the market. But we still have what I consider a very robust online distance education program. And it's not only distance now, it's certainly, and a lot of this is attributed to COVID, that even local students have some preference to online education.
I was going to ask you about that, if the pandemic had had a significant impact on increased enrollment, and if so, was that mostly online?
It absolutely was, and I have to say some of our programs on campus were a little bit hesitant to adopt the online format, only because traditionally they taught in the classroom, and there are arguments that classroom face-to-face training is better than online training. And the other, there are contrasting arguments that I can propose that it is has equal rigor, online and classroom-based training, but a different rigor. But for those of us that were comfortable in the online environments for so many years, and I think Regis has been involved now for about 30 years in online education, it was a fairly easy transition. In fact, it wasn't much of a transition at all because it's what we had been doing.
You know, and looking at your business background, I was intrigued because you lived and worked as chair of the MBA healthcare management program at Alaska Pacific University in Anchorage, Alaska. You've done some work there again in 2015, and now you're back there again teaching the MBA healthcare capstone. Would you tell us a little about the course and how you're structuring it and how this all came together that you got involved with Alaska Pacific University?
It was another one of those issues of serendipity. My dean of the graduate programs in the college, in that time it was the College of Professional Studies at Regis University, had been an administrator at Alaska Pacific University for about 25 years, and they wanted him to come back to run this nascent MBA healthcare management program. It was an endowed chair position, but he was already well past that. And he walked down the hallway and he said, "Fisher, do you want to go to Alaska to teach?" And I spoke with my wife and I said, "Patty, I said, if your dean suggests that you go to Alaska, what do you think the response should be?" So after considerable discussion, we decided to spend a year in Alaska, where I was the endowed chair of this program. And it was a tremendous experience. Alaska, if you haven't been there, and I know you have, Chris, is just in a magnificent, magnificent state, but it is quite isolating. And a year there was enough for us. I returned in 2010 to do some research at Copper Center Health Clinic, which is in rural Alaska, but it is on the road system. So I was able to travel there quite easily, comparatively speaking. And then I came back again in 2015 to teach a course at Alaska Pacific University. And 7 years later, almost out of the blue, they asked me to come back, and I jumped at the opportunity because it's always so enjoyable to go up there. The course that I'm teaching now is not quite the capstone, but it's the preliminary to the capstone for the MBA healthcare program. And I needed to find a project that I had some knowledge about because, again, I'm not from Alaska, and one that I thought would be interesting to the students. There are three major health systems in Alaska, all in Anchorage. One is Alaska Regional. Another is Providence, which is part of the Providence health system. And the third is the Alaska Native Tribal Health Consortium, which is as the name states, is a consortium of many of the health clinics and hospitals in Alaska. Alaska Pacific University sits on a very large campus that includes the University of Alaska Anchorage, of course, APU, Alaska Pacific University, the Alaska Native Tribal Health Consortium, and the South Central Foundation, which is their ambulatory system. And so it's on this sort of major campus, and there's a strong association now, and this wasn't the case when I was at Alaska Pacific University, but now there's a strong association between the Alaska Native Tribal Health Consortium and Alaska Pacific University, which provides tremendous opportunity to set up different projects. The project that I set up for the students was splitting the class into two teams. One team would represent, and this is all project, it isn't live client, it's a case study, and setting for Alaska Native Tribal Health Consortium. The other team is representing the Providence system. I am representing a large private foundation that will award I call it a faux grant, because there aren't any real dollars involved, a large faux grant to the team that can provide the best presentation of how their representative health system is achieving the various social determinants of health. So I'm going up there the 18th, the 20th of November, and that's an intensive. I have guest speakers coming in from around Alaska, and then the finale will be the presentation by the two teams on who can provide the most persuasive argument.
You know, it sounds, I wish I were going with you. It sounds like a really exciting opportunity for you and for the students. One of the things that you talked about, and I think I caught it right, the road system. I don't know if that's what I would call it, but in rural Colorado, we've had issues with healthcare access, quality of care, and cost. And in other states as well, would you share with our listeners about the healthcare issues in rural Alaska?
It's a pleasure to do that. Alaska has many of the same challenges that all states, and especially in the rural areas, have. And the Alaska economy is a little bit like the Colorado economy was pre, Denver Tech Center and our more diverse economy in Colorado now. It was based primarily on oil and gas and tourism and fish and seafood and lumber. And so there were times when the economy did not have the buffer that it required to remain robust. And over the past few years, there has been a bit of a recession in Alaska. Now, about 80% of Alaskans live in the two major metropolitan areas of Anchorage and Fairbanks. And about 40% of the population lives in Anchorage, but the absolute numbers of Anchorage residents, about 40% live just in Anchorage. So only about 20% of Alaska overall is served by a contiguous road system, which is really amazing because, Alaska is about 2.5 times the size of Texas, and it only 20% of it is served by roads, and that leaves about 150,000 residents inaccessible by roads, and that's the focus that I have. Those that live in the major, if you can call it that by Alaska standards, the major metropolitan areas of Anchorage and Fairbanks, they have the same access to healthcare that we do. I mean, they have good hospitals. There's a large military presence, especially, well, outside of Anchorage, but especially in Fairbanks. So the healthcare access quality is quite good. But when you try to reach those give or take 150,000 residents that live in rural villages, it's much, much more difficult. And rural Alaska they have the same challenges as any lower 48 rural area. They have higher suicide and overdose rates, especially among younger adults. There's less access to quality health care. There are outrageously high costs of food and fuel and higher costs and higher rates of poverty. One quick story, I was in Kotzebue, and this was quite a few years ago, which is just above the Arctic Circle on the coast. And I recall wanting to buy some sort of fresh fruit. And because it was, important to have as part of your diet. And I went to the store and there were two bananas that were a little bit brown and they were $9. And this was many years ago. So we're not talking about the difference between gas at $4.50 or $4 or $5 a gallon. We're talking about gas that could be $9 or $10 a gallon. So that even contributes more to those that live under the poverty line. That just accentuates the issue. So the difference in Alaska, as I mentioned, it's more than twice the size of Texas, and often, as we know, inhospitable climate. One example of how Alaska is unique from lower 48 rural areas is that just transportation, that one line item is the major expense for Alaska Medicaid. And the reason is that the patients can't drive in, they have to fly in. So depending on the acuity of the patient issue, either it's a bush plane or a commercial airline, or it might have to be an air ambulance, which can be very expensive. And it's often not just the patient that has to come in, because if they have to be in Anchorage for quite a while in the hospital, that some of the family members have to accompany them. So it's very expensive. It's very unique. Now, on the positive side, and this is, I think, really interesting, Alaska has this thing called the CHAP program, and they are clinical health aides and providers. And it's been very successful. They use paramedical personnel as medical and dental aides. Their CHAPs are similar to health coaches, though much more highly trained. And because they're unique to the villages, they are fiercely loyal to their local communities. Another advantage or another positive aspect of rural care in Alaska is that rural Alaska has been a pioneer in telehealth. And that's supported by, at the federal and state levels, through the Alaska Federal Healthcare Access Network and by the larger health providers. Now, there are still challenges to broadband access at the residential level, and that often requires the patients to go to the health clinic for their telehealth appointments. But it does work. You know, necessity is the mother of invention, and rural Alaska has done a good job with that.
As you share that, I was thinking about the dynamics of being there in the summer versus being there in the winter. Can you get across those lakes on ice in the winter instead of taking the puddle jumpers or the brush planes?
Well, I would never attempt it because as I've told people, that Alaska's for viewing and Colorado's for doing. And I have students in my class that would gladly do that, and they travel 12 months out of the year, no matter how rural, how isolated. But typically, that's difficult. They do use snow goes, and yeah, occasionally they use dog sleds. That's a little bit romanticized. They use snow goes, and they use a lot of bush planes. It is very difficult. And there are TV shows, I think, called Truck Icers or whatever they call them, that do that. But typically, it's a safer route using some sort of air travel.
No, Mike, it's been a pleasure hearing about your experiences in Alaska, both professionally and in regard to the healthcare dynamics there. Is there anything else you'd like to share to add to today's discussion?
No, you know, I think that the social determinants of health is the topic, whether you're urban, whether you're rural in the lower 48, or you're in Hawaii, or you're in Alaska. It is the topic, and we spend so much of our healthcare budget on disease care, on the typical silo care of hospitals and physicians, and we really need to determine how to have more emphasis on those social determinants of health.
I agree completely, and we have had several speakers at the Denver Medical Study Group on that topic, and continues to be a major issue. But I thank you for your time today, Mike, and I wish you the best in all of your endeavors and a safe trip to Alaska later this month, and I look forward to pictures.
Well, thank you very much, Chris, and I look forward to our next DMSG meeting.
Sounds great. Thank you.